right, what's up, everybody? Let's get into it. This is Wes Hoffman, and this is another episode of For What It's Worth. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate it. This episode is with Remington Pierce. Remington is a guitarist, guitar tech. They tour with the Venomous Pinks. They've played with the Bomb Pops. They have they do guitar tech work for Alanis Morissette and the Venomous Pinks and L7. Tons of bands, tons of awesome bands. So I'm super stoked to have Remington on the podcast. Make sure to give them a follow. I have their Instagram tag in the liner notes here. So it's just Remington with no vowels. So make sure to check that out. I really appreciate having them on. Very, very excited to talk to different people within the music industry and just kind of hear how they have found their career path in everything. So it's interesting to me because there's really no, you know, in the music industry, when somebody says like, hey, I want to get into the music industry, there's really not a designated career path like there is if you said, hey, I want to be an accountant, or I want to be a doctor or a lawyer, or I want to get into marketing. Someone would say, hey, go to school, study marketing, then, you know, try to get a job, shop out your resume to these companies. And I'm a recruiter, and I was a job coach and career coach for many years. So I think it's really interesting to kind of talk to people and about these career paths and the different things that they do and how this all came to be. So thank you guys so much for listening. If you do want to support this podcast, you can buy one of my band's albums. I would really appreciate that. That would be awesome. You can just go to weshoffmanandfriends.bigcartel.com and pick up an album, pick up a t-shirt. Anything like that helps. So really appreciate that. So, and if you just want to support in a non-monetary way, give us a follow on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and give us a rating as well. So, or just tell somebody about this podcast, share it on Instagram. Anything like that helps. So thank you guys again for listening, and enjoy this episode with Remington. All right, what's up, everybody? I have Remington here. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Thanks so much for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure.
Yeah. So so this is really cool because I don't really know you, but I like talking to people in the music industry that like. Of course, I love talking to people who play in bands and musicians and stuff like that. But I also like to talk to people like yourself, like. I know that you're a guitar tech. I love your videos where you do like time lapse of all these different cool guitars that you're working on, and I want to play all of them.
It's the best part of the job.
Yeah, totally. But I think it's interesting to, I'm always kind of interested to hear like, what was your path? How did you get into doing this? And like, how did you, you know, I know you, just from looking at your Instagram bio, I know that you work with like Alanis Morissette, L7. The Venomous Pinks, like I know you played in guitar in the Bomb Pops and stuff like that. Like, so I know that's a huge question, but can you tell us a little bit about just your path and how you got to be doing what you're doing?
Sure. Yeah. I've kind of been in this industry, God, forever. I've been touring for the past 12 years, pretty consistently. I've been a musician my entire life, and it kind of just sort of branched into me doing basically whatever I needed to do in order to stay on the road. Touring was kind of like the only drive I really ever had, the only thing I really ever wanted to do. So, and originally I thought that meant just playing music, and then ultimately once I got to touring, I kind of realized I never wanted to stop, and so I kind of just figured out what I could do in any capacity to stay there. And teching was something I already did. I was already doing my own gear as well as like people I was in bands with. I was already taking care of their gear. And then really it was during COVID that I realized like, oh, people get paid for this. Like, hold on. And so I kind of pivoted into it where it was just like, I was always doing DIY tours. You know, we never saw bands with crew until I hit a point. And then that's when I saw people with crew and I was like, oh, people actually don't do this for themselves. There's a whole band of people underneath it that I never saw just because I was in a DIY punk band. So that kind of opened my eyes and I changed into that. And then I started doing a lot of crew work and just sort of behind the scenes stuff. A, because I like it and I think I'm pretty good at it. And B, because ultimately it keeps me on the road and that's where I want to be.
That's awesome. So what were some of the bands that you originally toured with, like starting out?
Starting out back in the day, I was in a band called the Barbed Wire Dolls.
I know the name for sure.
Yeah. So that's ultimately what got me into touring is they, came through my hometown and then picked me up later, like flew me out to play bass for them in Europe. And that was the very start of touring for me as far as like touring in the music industry. I did a lot of traveling before that, but that's what got me basically in a tour van. And then I was in them twice over the years. I toured with like some other bands, DSR out of Charlotte. I was tour managing them like several years ago. Bomb Pops, like you said, I kind of just like, not really bounced around in a sense. Like I was pretty loyal for years, depending on where I was, but ultimately it's led me to working with a lot of different groups just because of how long it's been.
Yeah. So. That's really cool. So, yeah. So what was it about? Cause I'm not the techiest person when it comes to guitar. I know how to change strings. I know how to like do a lot of that stuff. Like, and a big part of it, I mean, I definitely have an interest. Sorry, I feel like the light. My dog's outside, so I've got the door open right here. But I feel like the
light. Oh, you're good.
Give this weird glare. I feel like I would definitely have an interest in learning how to like take care of my guitar better. But like, I just never. Just whenever I need something done, I just take it to the shop up the street. You know, what were kind of like some of your biggest opportunity, like learning experiences, and how to like. Because I feel like that's probably a lot of people that play guitar. They're like, oh, well, I'll just take it to Remington because they know what to do. Like, what were some of your biggest learning experiences and like how to do some of the stuff that you do with guitar?
Well, starting, like I said, I was a musician first. So everything I learned was basically out of necessity for fixing my own gear. For the first, I want to say half of my music career, I was playing bass on the same Fender Squire I got when I was 8 years old. It was like the first instrument I ever had. And it was like $100 back when I got it. So I can only imagine it's worth nothing now. For instance, certain things like wiring would go wrong. Like I had a broken output jack. And so I had to figure out really quick. I had to find somebody with a soldering iron and be like, okay, what the hell does that mean? What broke in here and how do I fix it? Something going along those lines, just kind of taking that and then kind of running with it, you know. And I had a Les Paul years later and there was an issue with my pickup and same thing. So then all of a sudden I'm learning about different kinds of pickups and stuff because, oh, this one's messed up. I'm going to go get a new one. What the hell does that mean? So now I have to look at like, what do I want to put in here? There's so many different options. What can I change it to? So honestly, so much of my learning was just spurned out of necessity. And then from there, you know, now I'm helping other people take care of things. So if I see something that I've absolutely never seen before, I just take to Google or, you know, I have a bunch of friends in the industry now. So it's just, you know, if I'm looking at something that I'm like, I've never seen this before, what the hell is this? I have several people that I can text and I'm like, oh, okay. And it at least points me in the right direction to go from there.
Yeah.
So it's really just kind of knowing where to look and learning as I go. That's with a lot of it. So
have you always been the type of person that like has kind of a, like you want, like I call it, my dad is this way. He has like an engineering mind. Like he was a farmer, but like he fixes everything himself. He loves to like, you know, try to do, he's like a do it yourself kind of type person and we'll just figure it out. Have you always been that kind of way as well?
I've always taken things apart and tried to put them back together. My dad has basically been trying to make me an engineer since I was a kid. and I told him like, screw you, I'm going into punk rock. And then ironically now I'm more or less a guitar engineer. Yes, in a sense, like I kind of have always been doing this sort of thing. I was enamored with tools from a young age, so just taking stuff apart, whatever basically I could fit a screwdriver into just for the sake of seeing what was underneath. I did a lot of that, building skateboards, so on and so forth. So kind of, yeah, kind of always done it, and now I just found like a creative outlet for it, I guess.
Are you a big skater too?
I used to be. a lot when I was like a young teenager, and I got a pretty bad, I broke my leg, and kind of stopped me for a really long time. Just cause I had to like completely relearn how to skate and do everything. Yeah. I did a little bit during the pandemic, like in quarantine when we weren't really allowed to do anything, I started skating again. I kind of picked it up, but, basically as soon as work reopened, I've been busy. So I haven't really gotten to do it as much as I'd like, but I'm hoping that changes soon.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I like, so I grew up on a farm and there was like nowhere to skate. We didn't have like concrete slabs or anything.
No, for sure.
Yeah. I was like I would ride my bike everywhere. I loved to like ride bikes. Gotcha. So then exactly same as you, like when COVID hit, I was like, I want to get a skateboard. So I just got like a complete debt, like with my STEMI payment, I got like a complete deck, and I like a Santa Cruz like deck that they just sent to me. And I just like started teaching myself, and then I fell. I actually hurt my hip in the gym, like working out. I like pulled something wrong with my joint. And I just like, that was like the last time I skated, and that was like a couple of years ago. But like, I really enjoyed like just the process of like, okay, like when I very first started, I was like not even comfortable on the board. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, you're like
complete scratch. Like you're starting at the absolute like zero bottom floor, completely relearning a skill. That's kind of, I did the same thing. I was like, oh my God, I used to be amazing at balance, and now all of a sudden this is weird. I was like, what am I doing? I'm like, as an adult, my kid brain like went right out the window, and I had no idea what I was doing again.
Totally. That's how it was. I was like, and then once I got to better, I was like, I don't really want to try to do crazy tricks. Like I'm trying to just like roll around the ramps and stuff, you know, but it's such a good, I feel like skateboarding is such a cool like metaphor for just like, you know, you have to take every little, like you just build up your confidence. The more you do it, you do little tricks, and you're like, you know, just going up a ramp and back reverse, like was fakey, like was like a big deal for me. I was like, oh my God, I went up and then I went back, and like learning how to spin on the ramp, like just do a kick turn down the ramp was really cool. So.
Yeah. Like you said, confidence. It's one of those things that it's, the entire purpose is like making yourself happy in a sense. Like there's no other purpose to skateboarding besides just learning how to do stuff, which I think is cool. There's no end game. You just go do stuff because it's fun, and that's it. You try to get better at it, and that's the only point. So
cool. absolutely. So you talked a little bit about touring and about how you like fell in love with just like being on the road, and I'm the same way. Like I'm 42, and my band just like, we toured a little, like when I was younger, I toured a little bit, but not like anything like we have been doing. And we're just doing like the longest we've done is like a week at a time. So, which is still like super, super fun. We've kind of, you know, me and some of the other guys that I play with, like we've really, fallen in love with just kind of being on the road. And, what was it about, you know, you said that you've kind of picked up teching, like just to stay on the road as much. Like, what was it about touring that really kind of, what's the word that I'm looking for? Grabbed hold of you, or like, you know, like that you literally
drew me to it. I guess, I don't know. The only thing that I can really describe is like, I've moved a lot in my life. And a lot of that moving has been because of touring. Like I've relocated several times in my life just to be in a closer proximity to wherever it was. I was like, for instance, I lived in Germany for a while because my band at the time, we were touring Europe over and over again. And Germany just happened to be where we ended up. It made the most sense as like a central location. So for instance, I've done things like that. But even like kind of my early life, you know, I was joint custody. I was like kind of never really stationary. I was kind of moving around a lot. So if I were going to get, you know, specific and dig into some therapy or something like that, like, I think ultimately that's kind of what led me to this sort of nomadic lifestyle. But honestly, really just being in this close proximity to music has really been the most important thing to me. And the camaraderie of being on the road and just the excitement of being on the road. And I am the type of person, like, as far as work is concerned for me, like, I don't like sitting in an office. I don't like sitting in the same place. I've tried it. It's not for me. The idea of being in this like super physical, very all-encompassing, like sort of dynamic as far as work or just what it is, not even work for the sake of money, but like work for the sake of just like building towards something, you know, working towards something, being a part of something. Just that show every day has been kind of like the biggest motivating factor for me. And it doesn't matter who I'm with or where I am, what type of music it is, what band it is, where I am. That drive has just kind of always been there. And I just kind of always wanted to keep doing that. And I found out very quickly, like, I think this lifestyle suits me because the first tour that I ever did was pretty much like 6 months straight with very little gaps. Like we didn't really stop. Little gaps here and there, of course, because that's insane. But like, for the most part, that and I was in Europe, so I was in a completely new location, and I was exhausted for sure by the end of it. But I was also just like, that was it. I was done. That was my life. I was like, I can't do anything else. That's the only thing I want to do. And it's just kind of been chasing that since then. And that was 12 years ago. So
that's awesome. Yeah. No, I definitely know what you're saying about like the camaraderie and you know, again, like, you know, we haven't done anything like 6 months or anything like that, but even just like, even just being out for a few days with your friends and like, and with another band or a few other bands, like getting to know everybody like super well. And it's like, it becomes like, it kind of, you know, it's like your little family or like your little group that you see every day, and you're not seeing your, you know, I'm not seeing my girlfriend, like, I'm, you know, it's like you're out on the road, you're away from everything. And so it's like kind of all that you have is those people, you know?
For sure. For sure.
So
a little microcosm of the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. And then, you know, you go back home and then you have your people and it's just like, I don't know. It sometimes it feels like, the last big tour that we went on, it felt like just entering like a different dimension or something like that. You know what I mean? So
I used to say it's like going to space. And so it's like you go and you do something that's really cool. And when you come back and you're trying to talk to people who have never been on tour before, how the hell do you describe space to somebody who's never been there?
Right, right.
Why do I do this? I don't know. You just have to go. It's cool. Like, yeah. That's really it. Like, it's amazing. I can tell you there's no oxygen and everything sucks, but it's so much fun. And it doesn't make sense to anybody at home. But, you know, it's just, it's like once you've been there, like you get it.
For sure. So, absolutely. Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about like, how did you, you know, and the music industry I think is interesting because there's like there's no, if somebody told me like, hey, I want to get into marketing or I want to be an accountant or I want to get into like business or whatever, you could be like, well, okay, you need to go get a degree and like, you know, maybe what companies, like I used to be a job coach and a career coach and I'm a recruiter. I've been a recruiter for 10 years. It's like my, what I do for a living, but
got you.
Yeah. So I'm used to talking to people about careers and stuff like that. Like how, and I think when it comes to the music industry and something like the type of things that you do, like with some of the bands that you travel with, like it would be hard for me to say like, here's the direct path to do what you want to do, you know? So I'm interested in knowing what was your path for like, you know, working with Alanis and L7 and some of these, you know, bigger bands that have been around for a really long time.
Ultimately, I think my number one piece of advice, honestly, and I was kind of thinking about this earlier, like what would I say in this instance? Because you could have every skill set in the world, but ultimately that doesn't make you good at touring. And what you need in order to be on the road with these people, not necessarily just the people who I've worked with before, but kind of anybody that you're on the road with, you really have to not suck. You have to be really cool in really tight spaces with people, and you just really have to have the ability to get along with whoever you're with all the time. My job specifically, like the kind of stuff that I pick up is 100% word of mouth. There is no job posting. I can't just like throw a resume up on a forum. Well, I could, but like ultimately that's not how it works. Like everybody wants a reference point with somebody you've worked with before to know, how does this person tour? I could be the best guitar tech in the world. I could know how to fix anything under the sun without looking, you know, without a single question. But if I'm hard to work with, nobody is going to give a shit what my skill set is. It's never going to matter. You have to be at least somewhat of an agreeable person to some degree to where people don't mind being around you for extended periods of time. So that being said, it is also a networking game. And I have been doing this for a while. I've had the pleasure of working with like a lot of different bands, a lot of different size bands. I've been to a lot of festivals. I've played a lot of different areas and I've made a lot of these connections and I've done the networking and I've made, you know, honestly, majority of the people I know in this industry are friends of mine. I would still go see them and still go hang out with them. And so that's where majority of it comes from, is somebody knowing what you do so that when they get the contact and they get a phone call, hey, so-and-so needs a guitar tech, let me call Remington really quick. Here's my phone number. I got the contact. It's these dates. Are you available? And then so from there, I have the ability to jump on that job and try to go get it. And ultimately, that's how this happened. I mean, L7, I got a couple years ago because they had an opening and one of my friends called me out of the blue. I hadn't talked to him in a while. And he's like, hey, I know you do this. Here's a phone number. Here's kind of a ballpark of what they're looking for. Call the number right now if you're interested. And I did. And I just had a conversation with the dude who was hiring and we hit it off. Everything was cool. And so I've been with L7 ever since. And same thing with Alanis, is I got to know a couple people that were already on that team. So when there was an availability, they just called me up. Hey, we want you for this tour. We're going through this situation. Are you in? Hell yeah. And so it's just all going down kind of the route like that, is just, who do you know? What do they think of you? Do you have a good relationship? Do you have a good reputation in the scene? How easy are you to tour with, honestly? And that's the hardest part with this, is nobody knows how they tour until you tour.
Mm-hmm.
It might sound awesome. It might sound super glamorous. And then you get there and decide that you absolutely hate it more than anything on the planet. And you can't stand to be in some sort of tin can for that extended period of time. Nobody knows until they get there. And unfortunately, that's the hardest part with this industry, is, you know, you can spend a lot of time trying to get into something only to find out that it sucks really, really bad. And you just have to figure out, can I handle that? Is that sacrifice worth it? Or do I love it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No. Yeah, that's awesome. No, that I was just like taking in everything that you were saying, like
for sure.
No, I totally agree with everything that you said about, you know, and other people have told me this too, like you, and just from my own personal experience, like, you know, at a certain point, it's like, I want to, if I'm going to be out, even if it's just for a few days, I want it to be fun and I want it to be around people that I want to be around. And you know, luckily we haven't had like any, hold on, my dog's tapping.
Oh, you're good. You're good.
Sorry about that.
All good.
Do you have a dog? I thought, do you have a dog at all? I see like a little house in the background.
I don't have a dog. I have a cat that's here right now. Oh, okay. So he's hiding somewhere.
Okay. No, I think, and people have told me that before too, where it's like, you know, you want to be around, you want to be an easy person to be around and be easygoing. And it is hard, you know, like, you know, it's like being away from home and all that. I can imagine, especially for extended periods of time, you probably just want your own bed sometimes and you want some space, you know. It's like, hey, I just need some space. I just need to like go and be by myself for a little bit, but you can't really get away. You know what I mean? So yeah, I definitely think that's huge. And then also I love what you said about just networking, and like, it sounds like you've really put yourself in the types of situations where like, you went on these tours and you were easy to work with and you did a good job, you know, not just good at your job, but like, you're also easy to work with and easy to be around. And then, you know, oh, hey, like all these people are connected. It's just like one big group. So it's like, oh, well, you need somebody here. I know somebody.
Definitely. Yeah.
And like putting yourself in those opportunities and those positions to like kind of be noticed, I think. So yeah, no, that's super cool. I love everything that you said there. I'm gonna rewind. I'm gonna be listening to this myself just to hear it again. So tell me a little bit about so like Alanis is you know, she came, I think, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, when Joan Jett and the Blackhearts played.
Yep.
Were you
that
on
was
that tour?
Last summer.
Okay,
yep.
Were you on that tour?
I was on that tour.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about, I mean, because that's a huge tour. I mean, I know that we call it Riverport here in St. Louis. It's been called like so many different things. Like it's always, there's like every few years, there's a different sponsor of the venue. You know what I mean? So
for sure,
if you're from St. Louis, you just call it Riverport. But it's like, I mean, that's pretty much the biggest venue aside from Busch Stadium that you could play. You know, was it different going from some smaller tours to a bigger production like that?
Oh, absolutely. That was a huge learning curve for me because I had never quite done anything that size before. I mean, just for Alanis, we were a 45-person crew. We had 4 semis, 4 buses. Like, the amount of work that went into putting that show on every single day was awesome. It was really cool. I really loved our crew. We all had a really good time together. But, you know, I'm so used to DIY single van tour. Like, you know, I work with the Pinks, which I love. I love DIY tours. I love super small stuff like that. But it's like, you know, it's one set of gear that goes in the back of this van and we all fit in there as well. And it's awesome. And then to translate that directly into, you know, I immediately stepped into 4 semis, 4 buses and arenas and stuff like that. It was awesome. But ultimately what's cool about it is like the job shifts, if that makes sense. So like when I'm with the Pinks and I'm the tour, you know, I'm tour manager, I'm driver, and I tech them as well. So it's like I have a lot less to deal with, but I do a little bit more of everything. So it's like my work stays about this size, if I'm going to use my hands as an example here.
Sure.
So when I stepped into the Alanis Morissette realm, sure, this production is this big, but my job still stays here because now I'm only responsible for 2 musicians and their gear. I'm not tour managing. I'm not driving. I'm not doing XYZ, all these other components. I had a lot more work as far as the rigs to go on stage and with guitar handoffs and like just a lot more pressure based on the fact the size, the scale of the production. But technically speaking, my work didn't get any harder. It was like my days were the same amount, you know, I could easily pull a 12-hour day just being on the road. That's normal. It just sort of shifted my perspective a little bit in the sense that it was like, wow, this is huge, but I still have my dedicated job that is punched out. I know exactly what I'm doing every single day. I just show up, I do my job, everybody's doing their job at the same time. And for a seamless production, when everything goes well, we all just fit next to each other, like, you know, just puzzle pieces. Like, it's like we all are our own component to this giant production. So that was really cool. It was really cool to see, and especially be in a realm like that where, you know, the Pinks, I am the only crew member for a lot of those tours. Conversely with Alanis, well, now there's 45 of us and we all have our dedicated position, and to see a lot of these professionals, it was really cool. Cause it was, again, just going back to the camaraderie thing of tour, it was really cool seeing everybody doing their own thing, all for the grand finale of this production. And, you know, the one show that we're working on that day is the only thing that matters. As soon as that show's done, the next show is the only thing that matters. So it's just, you know, the train keeps moving. It was really cool.
That's awesome. That is really cool. So 2 musicians, was it two guitarists or like a guitar and bass or?
Guitar and bass. So I had kind of like the band leader. He like had the most guitars and stuff like that. I had him and then I had the bass player as well. For Alanis's band.
So are you then the person that like, as they're loading all the gear, sorry, I just have a million questions about it. So like, and my Zoom's going to kick me off in 10 minutes. So, but we still got 10 minutes. Okay. So, I'm still mooching off that free version. I'm getting to the point where I probably need to go, like pony up and just pay for the full version, but you know, so when you, like when you get there, are you the person who like, you know, you take their amps and their cabs and everything and like, do you put them on the stage and like plug them in, wire them up, wire up their pedal board and everything? Like, can you kind of walk me through that?
Everything that musician needs, everything that they need either on stage, basically everything instrument wise that they need. So like I'm setting up, I've got their vaults, I've got all their guitars. I'm setting those up. I'm getting those strung and ready to go every day. I've got their full amp rigs. I'm setting those up, whatever those might encompass. I've got all of their pedal boards I'm responsible for. And then also during the show, I'm tuning, I'm doing handoffs to them on stage. Like anytime they have a change, I'm the one doing that. I'm the one packing it all up at the end of the night, making sure they have their green room guitars and those get transferred back and forth. Even down to my bass player liked candy on stage. So my job was to make sure he had candy on stage while he was playing. So anything like that. Like I just basically anything involved on the stage for the musicians, what do they need for the show? That's my job.
That's awesome. That's super cool. Yeah. I didn't know all that. So was that like all of that was a little new to you as well?
I kind of do that with anybody I tech in the first place, even down to a small scale, like, you know, the Pinks. What do you want on stage before you play? I'll go grab them drinks and stuff like that. Get everything set up exactly. Whatever they need on stage, that's my job.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Super cool. Okay. So a fun question for you. Do you have, do you have like a dream guitar that you would want to own someday or that you already have?
Ooh, okay. I do have one that I'm actively looking for right now. So in like the very late 90s, early 2000s, there was only a very short run of Gibson Gothic series, the Gothic number one. So they put out one model of Gibson for like each of their models in this Gothic style. And I have everyone except the 335.
Okay.
I cannot find the 335 to save my life. I want one. I am trying desperately to find it. If anybody finds it, please send it to me. But yeah, so I have, you know, I have the Les Paul, I have the Explorer, the V, I have the SG. I need the 335. That's the one I'm missing. And so
that's like the semi hollow body one, right? Okay. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Well, hey, if I find one, you'll be the first person I tell.
Awesome.
How many guitars do you have?
Ooh. Let's see. I have two Les Pauls, Telecaster, SG, Flying V, Explorer, three basses. What am I missing? Oh, and a Stratocaster. So I have 10 right now.
Oh. Okay. Okay. Cool. Well, that's a good mix too.
Yeah. I try not to have. You know, if I don't need six Les Pauls, I mean, I would love six Les Pauls, don't get me wrong. But as far as like, if I'm going to buy something new, I try to keep it within the realm of like, okay, what don't I have yet?
Yeah.
So yeah, the only thing is I do have two Les Pauls. They are my favorite. One is an Epiphone. I've been playing that one for years. That is like that's been my show guitar for like the longest. Triple humbucker, super custom and gold plated and all that. It's super nice. Been playing that one forever. That had the unfortunate fall off a luggage cart a few years ago, which I fixed. That was my first headstock repair. And then my second Les Paul is because I'm collecting the Gothic series. So I bought a new Les Paul just so I could get all one of everything in that series. However, I do love them both, and they both play differently. So
nice. Yeah, I'm a big Les Paul fan as well. That was like I just sold a Les Paul that I had, but because I got a Reverend now, and I really, really like it a lot.
I do like Reverends. I don't have one yet. That's something I would like to add.
I have the Charger. I really like it a lot. I was like, not that I didn't like my Les Paul. It was a Bernie Les Paul, but this guitar, I don't know why. I just like – it's like whenever you're a kid and you get a guitar and you're like – you just want to play it all the time. Like that's how I feel about this guitar.
That's perfect. That's awesome.
And what I was going to say about the Epiphones and the Squire, like sometimes those, like I've played Gibson and I've played, you know, I have a Fender Duosonic too. And I really love that a lot too, but
I'm fixing one of those right now.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah. I really like mine a lot. I have it up on Reverb right now, but
where's my table? That's what that table is covered in is just Duosonic.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, mess, but it's in pieces right now, but it will be put back together soon.
That's awesome. But yeah, I feel like some of the like the Epiphones and the Squires, like those hold up and play really, really well. Like, you know, I know that there's a huge price difference between like Fender and Epiphone and or Fender and Squire and Epiphone and Gibson. But it's like I feel like they're still really, really good playable guitars and like and
oh, 100%. And really a lot of them are for sure. Yeah, there's I mean some of them you can definitely tell the quality difference, but like when it comes to my Epiphone and when it comes to my Squire, I had the option of choosing the upgrade, you know, whether it was the Gibson or the Fender in this case. Both times I stuck with the original because it just felt good. And it's like, sure, probably isn't the best quality wood and the electronics aren't the best, but you know what? As far as playing it, it doesn't matter to me. I made it sound good and it felt awesome. That was all I needed. So
hell yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this. It was super fun.
Absolutely.
I know we'll cross paths again someday. I don't know when, but at some point. What do you have anything coming up soon? Any tours or anything?
Next week I am joining the Venomous Pinks for the last week of their tour. I didn't get to go with them for the first part, but I am gonna join up at the last little bit. So far, just that. We're kind of looking later down the year. It all, you know, we're rooting for Cassie, so it all depends on kind of how she's doing and so on and so forth. Other than that, my schedule's open. I'm looking, so.
Awesome. Cool. Well, if anybody listens to this and needs a tour manager, guitar tech, it sounds like you do a little bit of everything, so.
A little bit, yeah. Basically, somebody... if you need somebody on tour with you, let me know. I probably do it, so.
Hell yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Remington. This was super cool. I'll have this up on Thursday.
Sounds great, man. It's all good right. To meet you.
Yep. You too. Yeah. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Right. Bye.